Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. You're just in time for an interesting story about Ohio State and John Heisman. It's all coming together with a connection that Timothy P. Brown puts together in this story that's quite savage indeed. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another evening, and because it's Tuesday, we get to talk to Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you. Looking forward to chatting. Should be a savage discussion.
It certainly will be savage.
Should be savage.
And it always is savage when you have a rivalry. And yes. One of the biggest rivalries in college football, or is in your title at least. We'll see if it's in the story here in a moment. But your title of your recent tidbit is C.W. Savage, Michigan and Ohio State. That's like Hatfield and McCoy's with a guy named Savage in the middle here.
Yeah.
It sounds like. So what can you tell us about this story?
Well, yeah, I don't think the story really involves Michigan versus Ohio State, but it's more that this Mr. Savage was involved with both of them. Okay. And depending on who you believe, he beat both of them, or his teams beat both of them. So C.W. Savage, you know, somebody who's into football history may have run across him in the past. He was a longtime member of the College Football Rules Committee. So, again, you could have run across him because of that. And he spent most of his adult life as a professor and athletic director at Oberlin College. So that's, you know, kind of the position that he held. But he played for Oberlin. So he went there undergrad, played for them in 1891 and 1892. 92 was the year that John Heisman coached Oberlin. And that was, you know, actually his first year coaching at all. So in November of 92, Oberlin went up to Ann Arbor to play Michigan, and they had made a deal that they would end the game in time for Oberlin to catch the train going back home, right? Because, I mean, that was just kind of the fact that, you know, the reality of it was, you know, transportation issues. So they're playing the game, and at one point, you know, fairly late in the game, Oberlin is winning 24-22. And Savage, by the way, had a 100-yard touchdown run in the game. And so there was a point where Oberlin's like, okay, hey, time's up. We got to catch the train. So they walk off the field. Michigan continues playing and scores, and so they claimed a 26-24 victory, whereas Oberlin says, no, we won 24-22. And so that battle has gone on ever since. And I actually wrote about that like 2 or 3 years ago, because Michigan was coming up on like their 1,000th football victory. And I was just pointing out, well, they're counting this game in that 1,000. So, and there's probably some others like that, you know, like, should you count this game or not? But this, that was one where it's clearly a disputed outcome on the game. So, so that one just kind of has to sit out. That's kind of the end of that part of the story. But the other cool thing then was that, you know, when Savage is the athletic director, he hired a guy, I've never been sure how to pronounce his name, but Paul Desjardins, I think is how it's pronounced. But anyways, he hired him as the coach in 1916. He is a former Chicago All-American. And so he's getting ready to play Ohio State. And the week of the game, the faculty, there was some kind of fraternity hazing incident or some kind of fraternity incident. And like almost the whole team got expelled from school. So he ends up, he's got to put whatever he's got left. I mean, they literally, I think, were recruiting kids off campus to go play Ohio State. So they lost 128-0.
Oh, it's a close one.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, I just imagine, you know. I mean, because Oberlin wasn't expected to win the game to begin with, but. So then.
So I guess any time that your college ends with the word land and you're recruiting kids right before the game, it's going to be a whitewash. You know, I'm thinking like Cumberland against Georgia Tech in the 222-0 game.
So these poor guys, so then, yeah, CW does, you know, a smart thing. And he hired a guy named T.N. Metcalf, who he'd hired him at one point, and then the guy did well. So then Columbia recruited him, and he became the coach there for a couple of years. Then he comes back and coaches Oberlin again. And Oberlin, so they had a game scheduled in 1921 against Ohio State. And in 1920, Ohio State won the Big Ten, and then they played in the, I'm sorry, yeah, in they were Big Ten champs in 1921. No, sorry, I am screwed up. Big Ten champs in 20 and played in the 21 Rose Bowl. So now in the 21 season, they're the returning champs. And Oberlin goes to Columbus and beats them 7-6. So it's just one of those things where second game of the season, Ohio State's highly touted, and little schmo Oberlin comes in and beats them, you know, in a tough game and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of it. I believe that is the last time that any team from Ohio has beaten Ohio State.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess that was a little bit revenge for that 122-8 or whatever score it was. Yeah,
you beat me 128-0. I'm looking for revenge, man.
Yeah, we're going to embarrass you as Rose Bowl champions or whatever. So, yeah, and they probably did. That's probably more embarrassing for Ohio State to lose a 1-point game to Oberlin than Oberlin losing by 100 or whatever a few years earlier. So.
You know, it's actually, you know, not you say that, but as I recall, like you would think like the newspapers would just be aghast, but it's just kind of like, hey, they screwed it. They didn't play very well and they lost 7-6. You know, it was pretty matter of fact, you know, and it wasn't like massive headlines. It was kind of like,
Yeah. Can you imagine if that happened right now, in this day and age, Ryan Day would be, you know, they'd want his head and Columbus would be, you know, searching for him with pitchforks and stuff to find a guy. But yeah, it's amazing how, much football has changed over the years.
Yeah. For WC or CW, I should say, you know, had his hand in a couple of these. So just kind of fun little stories about football past, and you know, gets us to question, as always, whether Michigan really did win that game.
Yeah. And I mean, you do this in time and time again in your tidbits. You add a little bit of intrigue, like that, the first part of the story. You put some connections through history with this, in this case, this guy, C.W. Savage, and all his different connections and his Forrest Gump-like appearances through football history at some of these big games. And then you tell us a story about him, and it's a great piece of Americana, great piece of football history in your tidbits. And maybe you can share with us where we can find your tidbits at.
It's footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, so just go there, subscribe, and you'll get future stories just sent to you, via your inbox. Otherwise, you can just follow me on the application or on Blue Sky, and you'll be able to read the articles that way.
Well, Tim, we really appreciate you sharing the story, writing the story, and doing all the research on it, and then sharing it with us here tonight. And we'd love to talk to you again next Tuesday.
Very good. Look forward.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.